All right, boys, we got rookie minicamp. The vets are back. Football's back. Well, sort of back, but, you know, it's back enough for us to talk about. Plenty to talk about. A couple of guys help me do it. Let's get going. And welcome in, folks. It's episode 172 of Out of Your Falcon Mind, Atlanta Falcons fan cast. My name is John, your host. Not joined by Mike again because he's a good friend. He told a buddy that he would help him move today. And even though, as I was telling Joe and Adam here, that he's, you know, my age, he's 42 and should not be helping anybody move at this point. Like, the move credits end at 40. Like, that's when you just say, like, you got to pay somebody because it's done.
He needs beer that bad.
I don't know. Like, I was like, dude, look, I mean, you know, you're a good friend. You're a damn good friend. So you go help your buddy move. That's cool. But anyway, but we're trying to get a show on Thursday night. So Mike will be here for that one in case, you know, but we can get that show going. So, but yeah, anyway, but like I said, do have two guys here, Joe Patrick from 929 The Game, back on the show for the second time. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Good to be here, man. It's exciting time to talk some Falcons football after today, especially.
It really is. And then and y'all know Damski, man. Y'all know Adam has been on the show several times. We've done the draft. And I told, it's kind of funny because Adam, he just like, I sent him a text yesterday and I was like, hey, you know, like retweet this or whatever. And he's like, shit, man, have me on. I'm like, okay, like just come on. Cause we've always had like his schedule is always crazy. My schedule is always crazy. So like, we can never I just told him a long time ago. I was like, look, whenever you can, you just join. That's fine. Like, you have an open invitation. If you can come on, come on. So here he is. So Adam, appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm on a weird vacation week from my work, and I told myself I wasn't going to do any football things, but, you know, I tried to stay off Twitter, but I was like, got rookie minicamp, you got OTAs, and like, it's just like prime content time and prime look at Joe Patrick's Twitter feed for videos of Michael Penix throwing out ropes.
Yeah, man. It's just the same, dude. Like, that's kind of like it's been our new like thing to get the show started. Like, what's new? Like, Joe, I'm sure like you're not busy at all. Like, yeah, it's pretty slow time for you. So, what's happening in your world, man? Outside of, you know?
Yeah, no, obvious. It's good. I also cover Atlanta United, the soccer team here. So that's kind of a totally different story. They're not sure doing so great, but been busy with them. But also, yeah, I mean, getting Meg up there last week for rookie mini camp was great. It's always good to just like talk to the players and talk to the people at the team, because you go through this long period in the offseason where you're going from talking to them almost every day of the week, and then it really kind of shuts off because these teams are so secretive throughout this pre-draft process. They don't want to give away anything. And of course, there are a few media events with owners' meetings and combines and such, but you don't really get a lot of like real nice, like quality in-person time with them until this time of year when the guard's down. You know, everybody's excited about the players they've acquired and brought in and everything. So yeah, it's just been a lot of fun, honestly.
I bet. Adam, what about you, buddy? Like, what's your boy playing football? What's happening up there up north?
Yeah. We're right in the thick of things. He's had practice for about a month and a half now for tackle. We have our first tournament this weekend in Ohio. So we'll be up there. He came off back-to-back MVP tournaments and sevens, including beating former receiver Torrey Smith's sevens team called Level 82. They were on NFL Network.
Let's go.
And Torrey Smith came up to my son after scoring, throwing five touchdowns. He said, keep up, kid. You're going to go far. So it's pretty crazy. Like, so it's been a very successful off season and grind in. And then my high school is picking up now. I don't know if I didn't really announce it, but they moved me up to senior varsity football.
Congrats, man.
That was terrible. So yeah, it's a whole new stress. I feel like I'm on steroids, just like drinking coffees, trying to figure out what to do and how to condition. I've been doing like kind of coaching clinics, just trying to catch up on new stuff and just the grind of football. And then I finally got back into soccer, so I've been watching Real Madrid. That was my off season, so it's trying to keep myself a little bit busy with everything sports. Just kind of try to keep up with Joe Patrick, you know.
Hey man, thank God for Joe, buddy. Because like, yeah, I mean, I've been.
What about you, John?
Yeah, yeah. What do you
think? Okay, well, my kid's just he's done with eighth grade here in like 4 or 5 days, which is insane to me. Yeah, it's like you know, it's like your parents always tell you when you're growing up, like, you know, time goes much faster for us. Like, you know, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, they're 100% right. Like, it doesn't seem at all like he should be going into high school next year, but he's. And I was like, Amanda told me like 3 weeks ago, she's like, I don't know when you're going to record this next month. She's like, our schedule is packed. I'm like, yeah, it'll be fine. And she posts the calendar on the wall. You know, she's super organized. Thank God. Cause I'm not, I'm the exact opposite. So, she has like everything listed, and I just happened to glance at it one morning. I was like, oh shit, I don't know when I'm going to record. Like, that's true. Like, I don't know that's going to happen. So I told Michael, my dude, I don't know. And it's kind of worked out. Mike's been out of town for work. But Liam's got baseball damn near every weekend, and he's got, you know, he's got to throw a bullpen on Thursday. He's got practice on Wednesday. He's got hitting lessons or we'll go hit on Tuesday. Most of the time on Tuesday tonight, he's just going out for a run. And then he's in a steel band. So he plays steel drums. He's like the only in the, like this middle school he's in is the only steel drum band in the state of Georgia. So he's been doing that for 2 years. He had a concert this last week. He plays bass in the orchestra. So he's had two concerts in the last 3 weeks there to finish out the year. So it's just been like
the most interesting kid in the world.
I mean, that's Alberto, our buddy, he asked me, he's like, dude, what does your kid not do? I'm like, I don't know. If it makes me feel like a loser, I was like, cause that's not what I was doing at his age, like at all. Like I was like, man, this is impressive, buddy. But yeah. So that's just, we've just been slammed, buddy. It's just been one thing. And I, like you, Adam, like I tried to like, kind of, I had to almost kind of lay off Twitter for a bit anyway.
Yeah. Just,
but you know, like as soon as rookie minicamp started, I'm like, okay, I gotta
all in. Back in.
So it's like, yeah, we gotta get going.
Yeah, I actually have a daughter too that's graduating this year, but our school system is September to June instead of your guys' August to May, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, roughly.
And my daughter's going to high school, and you know, I've been taking that a little extra MMA classes.
Damn right.
So I gotta, you know, throw some hammers up there.
Well, will Croy be kind of protective, or is he already that way, or is he don't really care?
He's very protective, but also my daughter's obviously, I'm a coach, so she's around the football team, and she's going to the high school that I coach at, and I know a lot of the people, and then a lot of people I went to high school with are actually teachers there, so she doesn't really know how screwed she is that I'm going to have 24 big hours.
Yeah, she doesn't stand a chance, poor girl.
No, she doesn't. I feel bad for her.
Yeah, man. Well, before we jump into it, let's say hello to the chat one time. Jack, what's going on, man? You posted that. When did you post that? 7:30? Yeah, you were way early, dude. So, yeah, I appreciate you coming by, though. And by the way, you guys, before I forget, and I'll say it end of the show as well, but if you guys plan on going to any away games this year, the Rise Up Tour, the way to do it, Jack runs it, does a phenomenal job. Partly runs it. But just go. I'll post a link in the description of this video. They're doing a flash sale for membership, I think through midnight tomorrow. And it's like I said, if you're gonna travel to the away games, they do stuff together as groups. It's literally the only way to do it. So make sure y'all tap into the Rise Up Tour if y'all plan on doing that. Billy Mills, what's cracking, man? He said, what's going on? And we're gonna get into this. He said, if it's true that we get Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh week one, we can embarrass him early. And yeah, we're going to talk about that for sure. Kerry, what's going on? Good to see you. Definitely hit the like button. We appreciate that. Yeah. And if you look, I didn't even get through the whole intro. Like if y'all are new to the show, welcome. It's been a while. I've done like 3 shows in 3 months. So I'm a little off my game a little bit. So y'all can, but yeah, if y'all are new to the show, man, welcome in. Like I said, we're missing Mike tonight. But like I said, he'll be back on Thursday. But hit the like, subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be bringing more Falcons content to you now that things are kind of getting ramped up for the summer. And of course, during the season, we will come to you live twice a week doing a preview and a recap show. Having guests like these guys on when we can. It gets a little busier during the season, so it's always good to get the guests on the off season. And too, guys, if you're watching this on X or Twitter, you guys, your comments will now show up in our chat, so feel free to post, and we'll get you. We'll try to get you in as far as the comments go as well. Yeah, Mike's a good friend. Now, so he is a good friend. Like, he would do it for me. So, like, I mean, good for Mike going out there and, you know, getting it done. And Father Melissa, because Mike isn't here, I'll say it. Damsky the Mansky with the Plansky.
I feel like Mike's here now.
There you go. DJ, what's going on, man? Good to see you, buddy. Cool stuff I want to share. Yeah, Steelers Falcons leaked for week one. Yeah, we're going to find out tomorrow for sure. Ohio Sports Talk, what's up, boys? He said, I got to coach Chris Henry Jr. two seasons ago.
Nice. Oh, wow. Yeah, there you go.
And you might, I don't know if you're aware of these guys, Damski. You'll probably want to hook up with them too. They just started their Ohio Sports Talk not long ago. So good show for Ohio sports fans.
I'm all about it. Joe's actually an Ohio
State fan. Yeah. There you go. Right, it's kind of behind a picture, but the top of that football right there is signed by the 2002 National Championship team.
There you go.
Everybody, but there's like a few players missing, unfortunately.
And how'd you end up?
Me and Joe, we played the touchdown. Just to make sure we got together with the Alabama guy.
Of course. How did you become a Ohio State fan, Joe? Were you from around there, or just like that's just a team you picked when you were little? So, or what?
I didn't grow up there. I mean, I went to Middle Tennessee State for college. I mean, I grew up around here, but my family's all from Ohio. And so since I didn't end up going to a football school, I was just stuck with the school that I kind of grew up rooting for. And so like that ball was gotten for me by my aunt was a nurse with Mike Nugent's mom. Mike Nugent was the kicker of that team and had a long NFL career. And then my other aunt was also a teacher, and she worked with AJ Hawk's mom. So kind of like have some connections there.
Dude, good Lord.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And then actually my biggest claim to fame is I know a guy who was Brutus the Buckeye. So at like a house, I went up there for Columbus for a weekend at like a house party on the Friday night. I had drunkenly had the Brutus head on my.
That's amazing.
Brutus head on. It's a hockey helmet in there is what they use.
No, is that before social media really kicked in, or is it after that?
let's hope so. Yeah, it was probably the social media era, but it was early.
So, dude, thank goodness. I am so glad if social media was around when we were in college. Like, there's so many bad things that would be out there. Like, I'm so thankful that came afterwards. Stuff I would not want my kid to see.
It's
funny. I've got our Mark Ingram signed football downstairs, and I was so happy about it, and then it broke my heart when the freaking Saints drafted him. I'm like, God damn, man, like of all the teams he had to go to, man.
Welcome to us Buckeyes fans. Every Buckeye goes to the Saints.
Yeah, I know. Kerry, not a fan of Real Madrid, buddy. Let's see. Where was I at here? Oh, so what's going on, Wade? John, Damski, Joe, and everyone in the chat. Hope y'all are doing well and enjoying rookie camp. Let's not open against Arthur Smith as we start out hot. Let's play them in week three. I don't know, man. Like, it could, I don't know. Like, it's, what would you rather do, Joe? Would you rather play in like week one? Mm. Let's get it out of the way. Or would you want to get some time with, I mean, like, because they're both going to be, there's new systems for both teams, right? So it's like,
right. Yeah. I don't know what's more kind of advantageous for either one. I think you would, I don't know. Cause like they're both running new offensive systems. So,
right.
And especially, you know, I guess I would actually take the Falcons earlier in the year. I think that it gives them maybe a little bit of an edge because they have a more veteran quarterback as opposed to one of these younger guys for Pittsburgh. Well, I guess Pittsburgh's got Russell Wilson. He's veteran too. So, gosh, I don't know if there's an edge one way or the other. But I've been looking forward to the game because I was talking to John before we went live. You know, it's like when Arthur Smith was fired, I had a good relationship with him. And when you're covering the team and you're fortunate enough to be someone like I am, who's like, you know, allowed to be up there, like fully dedicated to covering them. And I'm up. So I'm, you know, talking to Arthur, you know, a few times a week. And then they're just kind of cut out of your life when they're gone. It's kind of crazy how you just like all of a sudden have this line of communication stop. So I've actually been looking forward to that game just to hopefully reconnect with them for a little bit. Cause he was always good to us in the media, you know, he just like come over and chat it up with us and a really cool guy. I know that he doesn't have that kind of reputation with a lot of fans, but I think if you kind of had the relationship that we did, you would, you know, maybe feel more fond of him because he is really kind of down to earth.
I always appreciated his dry sense of humor. Like I dig that, you know, like you could kind of tell, like, and he was probably not the same way with you guys as he was, like, kind of like standoffishness, I guess, not a standoffish, but kind of, you know, that kind of brood personality.
I would see the change, like the mode change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, Yeah. And I don't want to get, because people will get mad at me, so I'm not going to rehash any of that. But, Jordan, dude, anytime, man, let me know. I'll be happy to come on. I don't know. I mean, if I don't know a lot about Ohio sports, but, you know, maybe I can get Adam to accompany me and we can tag team it. But yeah, that'd be fun, man.
You could tell him about Caleb Downs, though. that's a sweet spot for John.
Okay, I couldn't even get, like, what are we, like 16 minutes into the show and Caleb Downs is in my face.
Sorry, John. I swear, I promise you that'll be my only one today.
All right. Well, we'll just wait till the season starts, and then I'll get it every week.
I don't think John's buying that.
Yeah. No. All right. So, Joe, we and you kind of briefly talked on the Falcoholic podcast on day three of the draft.
Yeah.
And we kind of briefly gave our kind of what, you know, our initial thoughts were of the draft. And so I kind of know that already. But like, so has your opinion since now, you've had the chance to kind of meet around the rookie, speak with him, whatever, since then, like, has it changed since that night or the day after or the couple of days after? Like, how are you feeling about the class now compared to how you felt, like, you know, right afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I think the class is fine. I obviously the Penix one was a big deal, and I don't know if anybody's heard like my thoughts on that, but I'm kind of like a lot of people where I was upset, didn't really know what to think about it at first. It was really puzzling. And then when you did hear the logic, it made more sense. And then the way I've now started to think about it, and if you want it to like make sense, we don't have to rehash the whole argument, but like,
no, go ahead.
For example, I would hear people say, like, oh, well, if Jaden Daniels were to fall to 8, you think the Falcons should take him? You know, probably a lot of people probably say, yeah, you know, because he was their second best quarterback. Well, you know, that's what Michael Penix was for this Falcons organization. And like when I was talking to them and I was trying to do my best, especially that night after they picked him, to kind of like drill down into like why they felt so strongly about this particular player. Because I was like, Terry, why not just like, you know, normally if you have a developmental quarterback, you just use like a third or fourth round pick on it. Not a first rounder. You know, that seems kind of crazy. And he's like, and his answer was like, yeah, we would do that if there was a third or fourth round pick that we really believed in, but we believe in Michael Penix. And the cost is then to, you know, draft him where we drafted them. And so that's what it really comes down to, is just the fact that they believe in him so much. And you hear the argument that's like, you know, I love the player, but I don't love, you know, taking him here or whatever. And I think the Falcons love him even more than you do. Like, that's just, the Falcons just love Michael Penix. And since we've been able to talk to him, I think he's just been super impressive, not just when he's talked to us, but I've heard him like talk on some other podcasts and stuff. And for, I think, obvious reasons, you kind of hear people try to like, I'm going to say, quote unquote, trap him, not like necessarily in a bad faith way, but they just kind of want to get his opinion on whether he feels like this way or that way in regards to his situation behind Kirk Cousins. And he just doesn't take the bait, and he doesn't kind of give in to this like either or kind of answer, which I think is like really, it speaks to like the level of wisdom that he has at his age. And I know a lot of people have also made the argument. It's like, well, if he's, you know, an older prospect, so he should be, you know, ready to start sooner. I mean, I don't know if I fully buy that. I mean, I think that actually him being a little bit older allows him to kind of settle into this situation and be more calm about it, as opposed to maybe being younger and wanting to kind of still feel like you have to make that impact. And I think that he knows he's going to get his chance 100% guaranteed, barring any sort of catastrophe. So I think that he's fitting in great with the Falcons, and I think the Falcons got to be thrilled with what they have. And he looks great when he's throwing the ball, and again, it's just against air and stuff, but you really can't tell when, you know, when you're there and you're seeing, you know, Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke throw balls all season, you know, you got to get a feel for like how they throw, and Marcus Mariota, by the way. And then, and then you see, you know, just like, it's just a different level of arm talent, which is fun. You don't know how that's actually going to translate when it's 11 on 11, you know, 100% in a regular season game, but he's got some time to make sure that he can kind of get refined enough to make it so that his arm talent is working for him. And, I'm excited for the whole thing. And as it relates to the rest of the class, I mean, I like the ideas. I like, you know, reinforcing that defensive line, trying to build it up. I think that the theme was kind of, you know, a longer term outlook for this team, with both with regards to Penix and with a lot of these players that they drafted on the defensive side. I do find it interesting. I just want to throw this in, and then that'll be my last word. I'll kind of toss back to you guys. But it's funny to me when you see, you know, obviously the consternation over Penix, the, you know, not so great feeling about Rukororo because of the trade up to get him, which I get totally understandable. But then it's like when the Falcons pick Braylon Trice and Brandon Dorlus, and those are kind of the names that are still on the top of like Mel Kiper's best available, or like, you know, the pundits online still had him available and he was their best option. great pick. It's a great pick, you know, and applaud the Falcons for that. And everybody's in agreement with that. And I just think that there's like, you should have an open mind as to the level of randomness that will occur with these players' careers, no matter how we think about them after the draft. And I think that there's just kind of, it inputs like a bias that we now have as one of our prior preconceptions of these players, of where Brandon Dorlus and Braylon Trice were good picks and therefore they're going to like develop better, whatnot. And I think it's just, you know, time will tell with those players. But, you know, it's always really impressive. The past couple of years I've been covering this team, just when you get to talk to the players, just how impressive they are as people. And I think that's something that they really care a lot about, is bringing in, like, you know, quality people as well as players. And I think that you can't really go wrong with that strategy.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think, to piggyback on that, it seems like mock drafts have really clouded our minds like where players should go. And like, cause you see so many of them from really January, hell, probably December on through until the, you know, the draft of like where these guys are going to go, or where they, the media pundits, whoever, think they should go. And then when that doesn't happen, because they don't understand that NFL teams may see these players differently than fans do, or differently than media does, then everybody thinks, oh, what the hell? There's no way that guy can go there, you know. But then it's just different trains of thoughts. What about you, Adam? Wasn't you still, since the draft? I know we were on the draft night together. We weren't happy, but I mean, like, since then, like, how you feeling?
Yeah, just to piggyback off the mock draft thing, I was scrolling Twitter and I seen somebody make a mock draft for 2 years out, which is like crazy, right? I'm like, that's wild. But
who's picking in 2 years?
Right?
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know. I guess that's people's jobs, but it is what it is. But I mean, my reaction on draft night with Penix is what it was. And like, I made sure to hammer home the fact that I like the player. The pick is what screwed with my head. It was like, cause like, I didn't even think this was even on the radar. And like Terry said, that's exactly what we want everyone to think, because like, very truly, like on draft night, as soon as we draft him, there was like three teams that wanted to move up into the 10 for Penix. So I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Like, sometimes one thing I read that like, oh, they like way overdrafted him based on consensus boards, which I go off consensus boards as well. But then I was listening to guys that are plugged in the league, like Daniel Jeremiah, Nate Tice, Robert Mays, and stuff like that. Even though Nate Tice hated the pick, he said sometimes the consensus board is wrong when everybody in the league views it a different way. So it seemed like the league was higher on Penix than the consensus was outside of the league. So, I mean, that's the case to build for, like, rationalizing that pick. Like I said, ever since then, watching the OTAs, watching how he handled himself, even me just going back and watching some film. I actually know my buddy. He works closely with the University of Washington staff. So I was able to talk to him and just pick his brain about it. He went and seen him live in person. He said, when you see him throw live in person, you'll get like a better understanding for the arm talent he has. And I didn't even have to see it live in person. I see him. It's kind of damning. You see Kirk Cousins throwing out, and like, I know it's OTAs and I know it's 7-on-7, but throwing Kirk Cousins is more of a timing. It's like perfect on time, bang. And Penix is like, oh, I got a second, bang. It's like there right away. So that's like, it's just exciting to see that much zip on a ball, because we have not seen that. Even Matt's prime. Matt's always been a timing thrower. So Matt was really good on deep balls, because he was really good to get them on time. And then Julio Jones being Julio Jones. It was honestly probably since Vic. Or Byron Leftwich. Byron Leftwich had a cannon too, but he just wasn't good. I remember him. But honestly, the pick that threw me the most was the Rucaroro pick. It was just other players that I thought fit better. Rook's very raw from the film that I've seen, so that's just going off what I've seen. I like when they traded up, I was like, this is Cooper DeJean 100%. I just thought he fit like that Fangio style defense, being that force player, and then it's fitting that the Eagles go and draft him where Vic Fangio is, and I'm just like, well, at least my mind was in the right spot. But the results is insane. But yeah, I was very much Braylon Trice is a good little pass rusher, but Brandon Dorlus was by far my favorite pick in the draft. He's been a favorite of mine for about 2 years now. When I was watching Kayvon Thibodeau film like 2 years ago, Brandon Dorlus pops all the time. Like, he's just, and I said this, and I was talking to the guy that scouted him. He's just one of those guys that can play anywhere from like six tech in. And like, that's just a nightmare to deal with. And the way that we're going to be playing like a five man front, and having like matchups everywhere, like just having a guy that can play like so many spots and be like, here, play over the center, here, play over the guard, here, go and attack the go pin him on the tackle so we can loop around. Like, it's just, he's such, I really feel like that's an underrated pick that's going to probably play a long time in the league. That's just my opinion. JD Bertrand was, he's a fun little player. I've seen lots of, from him. And I'm just curious, like he seems like he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be stuck in the film room and in the weight room. You're going to have to like physically kick him out to get him out. So he seems like a guy that's, that could fit right into this game. And then that receiver that we dropped, I forget his name, but I just see everybody like, oh, this is our Puka Nacua. I'm like, I feel like it doesn't work like that. I feel like there's not a Puka Nacua in every single draft. But like, he is big, he's physical, he fits the archetype. So I'm excited. I do like the Rook pick probably threw me more than the Penix pick. And people will probably say that's crazy, but I actually liked Penix. It's just where he was picked by us, and then obviously Kirk Cousins and outside factors factored in on that for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, and like you know, hopefully said here, they liked Rook's length. Yeah, I mean, he's got, I mean, next level type length is if you're looking at like the measurables and everything. And like Adam said, I mean, he's definitely, you know, you're betting on what he can do at his ceiling. And it's probably, when you look at, you know, you've got Grady and you have Onyemata, like it's two great guys from to learn from, kind of like Penix. Like, you don't have that pressure to come in and be like a guy from the start. You've got some time to learn from these guys and really kind of, you know, Jay Rogers, I'm sure, is going to put his handprints all over the dude before it's like, you just mold him how he wants, how he, you know, prefers him to play. And it was interesting. I listened to Brandon Dorlus talk. He was saying that basically the way Jay teaches was completely opposite of what he learned at Oregon. So he's having to kind of like, I was like, damn, what are they teaching at Oregon then? Because like, they're having to like, it can be that different, but I guess maybe it can. But it's just personalities wise, man, like Joe, it looks like Rook is like nonstop energy. Like, I mean, just listening to him talk, he's like, he's just like that dude. He's just like always, it's like Mike. He's just always up.
Yeah.
Like, always
up. Exactly. He's like a puppy dog, you know, he's just full of spunk.
Yeah. And Dorlus seems kind of similar, like kind of just like very like kind of like love, like fun loving guy. Then you got Braylon, who seems like Braylon seems like a mean, like good way, mean, like just like he determined. Just wants to, like I'm just going to go through whoever's in front of me for whatever, you know. So it's like that, and it's awesome to, I guess y'all might have heard by now, and folks listening, the story that Zion and Rook and Dorlus, they were all at the combine together, and that's all so like crazy. Like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we ended up on the same team? Like, there's the chance, that's like winning the lottery type chance. It's like, it's gotta be like insanely high, and like you know, and then they end up on the same team together, so here they are, which is hilarious. But from the press conferences, Joe, like from those guys talking, even Coach Raheem talking, like what, anything that's kind of stand out to you, like kind of like catch your, like, man, like that was, I didn't expect that, or just something new.
Yeah. Rook is definitely one of those guys where as a media member, you're like really excited for him. Like if you know you're going to talk to him or you see him come walking up or what, you just like, can't wait for the conversation to start. Cause you don't know, you know, where it's going to go. And he's so fun loving. And I thought something he had to say was, it kind of made me chuckle at the time, but I was like, yeah, that's a good point, where he's like, you know, someone was like, you know, what are you looking to improve the most or whatever at this camp? He's like, I just need to learn more about football. He's like that really, I just need to learn more about the sport of football because I haven't been playing it for that long. And it really made me think like, damn, that's true. Like you
say,
you
know, 7 years,
he started,
right?
Playing his junior year of high school and,
you
know, and there's a lot to it that you pick up, you know, these little kind of nuances of the game that you pick up over the years. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I love talking to JD Bertrand. He went to the same high school I did. So that's kind of cool connection. We haven't talked about it a ton, but I did mention it to him last time, but they seem to love him. Yeah. They love him. They absolutely love him. I think they were ecstatic that he was still around for them to take with that fifth pick. And, you know, I heard that there were teams interested in that pick, that the Falcons specific pick there for fifth, perhaps to draft JD. And they obviously love what he's made up of. And I asked him about it. You know, I had heard that he'd had these, you know, relationships with Luke Kuechly. James Laurinaitis, obviously his position coach at Notre Dame, hooked him up with some of these guys, Sean Lee, another one from the Dallas Cowboys. And for a player, it's not just that he's got the connection. It's not just that someone put him in touch and he makes these phone calls or whatever, but the fact that he, at his age, you know, like, is looking out for that for himself in his career, to like be in touch with these types of players. Just to have that kind of forethought into improving your own game, I think is, it just speaks to a level of not just maturity in terms of, like, you know, asking your coaches for help, you know, and kind of being vulnerable like that, but also just like the planning and diligence and discipline to want to do it, is to me really, really exciting. I think that's what the Falcons love about him. And I think that they have an immediate use for him, both as a rotational linebacker, but also on special teams. And I think there's a lot of hope that he can grow into a lot. So, yeah, it's just a really good group, honestly. And to bring it back, you know, the Falcons, they put a lot of stock in the character stuff. And I know for some people that might be off-putting, you know, because some people, like, you know, don't want to, like, judge players based on, you know, certain preferences that they have in their personal lives or whatnot. But, you know, the Falcons take it into account. And I think that it shows when you go into the locker room and, you know, Mike Rothstein, my friend who works for ESPN, was on the beat, obviously, last year. He made this point last year, after they lost that brutal game in Carolina, and I was in that locker room too. I traveled for it, and it was absolutely, it was like a funeral in there after that game. And Mike made the point of saying that every person that he went up and talked to, and he talked to a lot of people, no one turned him down, and they have every right to turn you down. I mean, they can just say, I don't want to talk. And you would get it, honestly, in that circumstance. If it were me, like, I would understand if someone was like, nah, I can't do it right now. But everybody talked. And I think that just speaks to, you know, to this kind of diligence that they put into making sure they get the right guys in that locker room. And I think when you go inside, I wish everybody could take a look. But when you're in there in a, you know, week eight in the middle of the season after practice, these guys love each other, you know, they're like having fun and talking each other up. And it's kind of funny. The lockers are all kind of, it's all pretty much random. Like Bijan is wedged between like Ryan Neuzel and like somebody else. And they become, you know, best friends. And so it's just kind of like good to see these different personalities interact. And I think it's just representative in this draft class as well.
Yeah. I think Raheem called, talking about JD, I think they called him a ready-made vet. Yeah, as a rookie, basically, like the, yeah. I mean, that's a hell of a thing. I mean, and like you said, I mean, if he's got guys like, you know, Laurinaitis and Lee and Kuechly helping him through film study, I mean, that's pretty solid to have somebody like that, like at that young in that young in your career. You know, that's phenomenal, man. So, yeah. Also looking at Braylon, you know, they ask him. Kind of, well, yeah, I think, you know, you were there, obviously. They asked him about how he kind of viewed his play style or whatever, and he was just kind of like, man, this is a cold world, and like, I'm gonna go through everything in front of me to get, you know, they're between me and my money or my life, and so I'm gonna go through them, you know. And it's, you know, and people, some people forgot, like, he did play for Jimmy Lake for, you know, the West season while he was there, so he's kind of familiar with already what he's going to do, or some of the, but he did say, like, definitely some things have changed for sure. And to have, he's gonna have a different defensive line coach, but he's one of those guys that you can see almost like stepping in immediately, you know, just for alone the edge we have, the need we have at edge alone with Bud Dupree now going over to the Chargers. We still don't know what Calais is going to do, so it's like, you know, I can see Braylon stepping in early and having an impact.
I mean, and listen, it's OTAs, it's May, so this is like, we're nowhere close to like setting starting lineups or whatever, but I saw him in today with Arnold Lemicady in the Falcons, like what looked to be their base nickel package with their starters. So, yeah, I think he's definitely in the running to be a guy who's playing. You know, I always never like this. I don't like to say starter, because like, it's funny, the starters who might come in for the base package on the first play might actually, some of them might play very few snaps, but yeah, I could definitely see Trice being a guy who plays 60% of snaps or more, which would qualify you as a starter in my book.
Yeah, we spoke briefly about Casey Washington, but like, I mean, there was somebody in our chat a few weeks ago that said like he's gonna be the sleeper pick of this draft, and I don't know if they were just bullshitting or if they were like serious, but like it looks like he's had a pretty good couple of days.
He had a nice diving catch today right on the sideline. It was beautiful. Yeah, and the guy is freaking built. I mean, he's got arms. Like, again, I didn't know who he was, honestly. Like, you know, sixth round. He's like barely in Nate Brugler's beast thing. Like, I have no idea what the guy looks like. And so they have all these players around, and I was on the rookie minicamp day, and I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is Casey Washington, because I just know he's not. I know this isn't any of the other players that I know what they look like. So this must be Casey Washington. But this guy's arms are freaking massive. Like, I thought he's a wide receiver. And yeah, I mean, the guy is built, which is impressive. And he ran good numbers too. I mean, he had good testing numbers. He just didn't really have didn't produce a lot in college because he had, I think, a kind of a weird situation. So I think that, again, it's kind of a bet on the traits by the Falcons in this one.
Yeah, I agree. And looking at what they were, I don't know, just hearing what Penix was saying, and also hearing what Kirk was saying in his interview as well at the press conference, it seems like some of the media is trying to kind of bait Kirk into like this controversy that's not really a controversy. You know what I mean? Like, they several questions about Michael and how he felt and everything, and it's most every time he was like, yeah, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. Like, I'm trying to win, you know, like we're all one team working for the same goal. We're in the same, like, the quarterback room is, we're all one force working for the same goal. You know, they asked Raheem, and he's like, and I love, and this is the thing I took from Raheem's press conference, and I loved what he said. He was like, the onus is really more on Michael than it is on Kirk.
Yep.
Like, that was the favorite thing I heard him say. It was like, it's not on Kirk to build this guy up or help him along. Like, it's on Michael to watch what he's doing, to see what he's doing, talk to him, whatever. Because Kirk's trying to win games. Like, that's his job right now, you know? And like, so it's just, that was perfect for me. So it just seems like, I mean, we all know, like, the most popular guy on the team is a backup quarterback. When the starter's not doing well, like, everybody wants to see the backup, right? Mm-hmm. And we all know that if Kirk has a bad game, there'll be a section of fans that are like, all right, time for Penix. Let's go. You know, let's get in. And it's, you know, it's not, unless we said on the last show, Joe, I mean, like, unless Kirk literally falls off a cliff, like the performance just goes like away, or an injury, like, he's going to be starting for 2 years just based on the compensation alone, right? I mean,
it's pretty cut and dry at this point. It's a 2-year contract. And if you look at the numbers, if you just use, you know, take the numbers that Kirk's going to make these 2 years, and then what Michael Penix is going to make in the years that follow that, on top of, you know, the dead cap that will accrue from, you know, cutting that contract short with Kirk, you know, they're never, they basically made it so that, you know, because the criticism has been, well, they're not going to get the rookie contract. Yeah, that's true. I think that's kind of the Falcons hedging their bet and saying, we don't even care about the rookie. We don't care about a cheap, good quarterback. We just want the good quarterback. We will absolutely take a good quarterback for market price. And for the next 5 years through Michael Penix's deal, you know, they're going to be paying at most, I think, $46 million or something around there for their quarterback room, which is about average for, you know, a top half level quarterback play in this league. And as low as, I think it could dip kind of into the 20s toward those, maybe the last couple years of Michael Penix's deal. So I think the Falcons see that as being, you know, pretty good business and something they're content with. But yeah, I totally agree with you, John, about the, you know, the onus being on Penix. And I love also, Raheem just has this kind of, like, he can put this flourish on his little points, and he's like, Michael has to walk in silence in the shadows and watch Kirk and his movements. So, like, I love it. It's like, just like, watch the way that he carries himself. And, but it's true. Like, you do have, it is good to have models in your life that you can kind of see how they do it so that you can do it. You know, like, when you started your job, you probably had, like, somebody who showed you how to do what you're doing, or, you know, you had someone who could, you know, who you could follow. They weren't necessarily there to, like, coddle you the entire time and be your teacher, but you could, like, look at how they worked and then pick up things and do it for yourself. And so I think that it's just no different in this circumstance. And I think I think the Falcons honestly see a benefit in this. Like, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, why do both Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix? And I think that they kind of see that as part of what makes Penix, what will make him a great player in their minds, is the fact that he won't be relied upon to just come in and be the guy with nobody to kind of be that model for him, that he can watch Kirk as he goes. And there's probably no better model to have than a guy like Kirk Cousins, who, you know, we all watch the Netflix doc, like, he prepares like crazy. And, you know, that's what it is for these quarterbacks. Like, during the week, they're just like, it's so much studying and just like trying to get your mind mentally ready to play on Sunday. And even going back to Raheem's introductory press conference, that's something that I had one question. It was like tons of media there. I asked him about Zach Robinson. He was like, Zach, he's like, I've never seen someone get a player ready to play on Sunday like Zach. And so I think that both he and Kirk will be great influences for Penix when he finally does get his opportunity.
Yeah, that was clear with Baker Mayfield that week that he signed. He was signed on Tuesday and like showed out on Sunday and yeah. like put on a show. Yeah. So yeah, that made sense.
Even to take it to the point, I remember in the quarterback's documentary, I think they showed Kirk would like listen to a play that he would have recorded into his phone when he's on his way to, when he's just driving, he would just listen to plays and then recite them again and then just kind of go through them as he's driving. And there was a story told today that, you know, Michael Penix had plays on his phone that he was then using out. This was after practice. He brought his phone out, would listen to a play from his phone, and then he would actually run the play as if he's the quarterback, setting, you know, initiating shifts, sending guys in motion, you doing the cadence, and then call and snap, and then run a gasser down the field 100 yards and back, and then next play. And, he did several of those. But, you know, so you can already kind of see a little bit of that maybe coming to fruition.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I thought it was cool, too, that Michael, he said that he got the playbook way ahead of time, but some of the guys didn't get it till like a day ahead of time. So he had like a mini walkthrough with those guys before minicamp started, you know, which is, that's a hell of a, you know, that's a leadership thing to do right there is, take those guys. And he said multiple guys were, they told him like, hey, that really helped, you know. So, but listen to all the teammates talk about him, especially like Braylon. He said he's different, like a different level of maturity, like for his age, you know. And like even, and Michael talked about, you know, how the injuries wasn't like, obviously you don't want it to happen, but almost a blessing in disguise, because it did teach him how to be more mentally tough, how to deal with things. And like, it's because, you know, that coming off an injury like that, I mean, hell, my son, I mean, granted he's 14, but he suffered his first injury in January. And like, that's, it's just a different, like when you haven't done it before, and all of a sudden you think you're invincible, and then that happens, it's like, man, like you have to take a step back and kind of reassess things. And, you know, so it definitely, I can see how it's going to make you grow. And it definitely has with him. I just from everything I've seen, the way he handled that press conference, I was like, man, you couldn't have like scripted that any better. Every answer he said was like perfectly, no matter what they were asking, it's like he was just boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. And so it was awesome. Adam, anybody like any of the rookies stuff, I mean, that you heard on the press conference, does anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, the things today with Kirk, I don't know, man. And it's funny because I'll message Joe and I'll be like, yo, ask him this, like trying to get him to ask him something. But like, I honestly feel like Joe and then the new ESPN guy, I forget his name, but I feel like they're the only ones that are there and like ask football questions. Like, and like, I appreciate when those come, because like I'm listening to the media thing today with Kirk. I'm just like I don't care about any of this stuff. Like, right. Nobody in this room cares about any of this stuff that you're asking. I'm like, it's either like some international reporter or it's somebody just trying to get a quote. Or I'm like let's ask about Zach Robinson. Let's ask Kirk about his relationship with Zach Robinson, or like what's some, like, you know what I mean? Like, let's get to some football questions in that sense. Yeah. So like, I don't know, man. Like, that's why I, for the most part, I don't listen to the press conferences with the quarterbacks, is it's usually, specifically right now with Atlanta, they're just so, it's so bad. It's egging Michael Penix to say a quote or Kirk Cousins to say a quote, basically trying to pin them against each other. And it's frustrating, and it's unfortunate that like they can't coincide until, you know, Kirk in 2 years probably maybe wants to retire if he has some pretty good success. And then, you know, Michael Penix, maybe he isn't ready right away for the NFL flow of the way. So, you know, maybe sitting a year or two is going to do him good. So like that, in that sense, it doesn't make sense. But I won't speak, because I know Joe really liked Arthur, but I won't speak ill of Arthur.
I don't care.
I'll say this, that I just feel like when Raheem talks in the press conference, everybody's like happy and excited to like greet and talk with him. I think Arthur was way more standoffish, and totally like Raheem's more like, hey, what are your issues? I'll talk them out. Let's talk them out right now. And I feel like it's just Arthur's like so focused on football. And I think in like 5-6 years, he's going to come back and be a good head coach somewhere. We're Raheem. This is Raheem's second go around. So he's like, hey, I know how to deal with the media. Hey, you know, this is the kind of character I am. Hey, this is what we're going to do. So, like, I feel like that's where you see Arthur being a young head coach and then Raheem being an experienced coach now, being able to deal with things like that. But yeah, seeing Raheem, I always speak on like my experiences playing sports. When I played my best coach that I ever played, I played college rugby. And my coach finally got through to me because he was a player's coach. And I never had that until I got to university and played rugby there. And I played my best rugby when I played under him. Prior to that, all my football coaches and all my rugby coaches were like, hey, you know, you're an asshole. Go run 15 laps. Da, 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 you fucked up. Go do 17 laps. Like, you know what I mean? Do 500 up downs. Do, you know, bear crawls across like 500. You know what I mean? So, seeing a coach like Raheem, like I just know that those like players tend to, I don't want to say like them more because Raheem definitely could get more out of a person, but I feel like the players in the room is like a big breath of fresh air with them, like guys like Drake, guys like Kyle. We're new scheme, new people, and I think it's going to be really fun for those guys. But the one thing I wanted to say, like, the thing that confused me with the Kirk Cousins Michael Penix thing was, oh, you're not going to see the benefits of drafting a rookie contract, like rookie quarterback. Like Michael Penix, third year, he's still making like, I think it's something like $10 or $9 million or something like that. I didn't look at the exact numbers because he didn't sign his contract yet. Like, do people realize like the medium is like $40 million? Like, you're still getting the benefit in year three and four.
Yeah.
And then even when you pick up the fifth year, typically when you extend in the fourth year, the fifth year is they lower that to like even half of what they were supposed to get in the fifth year. So, I mean, it's like they're still going to see after Kirk, they're going to have 3 years of roster construction that they can go all in. They can get it. And if Penix hits the ground running in year three, like Jordan Love did, like, the team's going to be in a fantastic spot, both financially and just with the youth of the squad, right? Because Drake will be young. Bijan will still be young. Kyle will be young. You know, Jesse will be hitting his 30s, but he's, you know, the position he plays, he's understanding, like, the defense as a whole. So he'll be smart enough to do it. So, like, I mean, the pieces are there. They're just going to have to just keep hitting in the off seasons. And, like, the biggest thing is, like, if Michael Penix hits in year three and he hits the ground running, like that's people got to understand that's the best thing for this franchise. And having to pay a quarterback is a good problem to have because that means you need that kind of guy, right? So it's a lot of confusion for me. Like a lot of the things when you draft Penix, like I get it. Be upset, sure. Don't just make stupid things up. Like you know what I mean? Like in year three, like, you still have 3 years of roster construction to build a solid squad. So it doesn't make sense.
It seems like most people have kind of come around to it now, I think. You know, and honestly, it almost seems to me like the controversy that there is about this pick now is more like Penix should play sooner as opposed to later. You know? So it's kind of funny how
now he's the best quarterback in the draft,
Exactly. I did some napkin math on this. I'm just reading this from a text I sent a friend the other day. I have the Falcons as, you know, over the next 5 years, the most they'll pay would be next year at about $45 million. I have it at like 36, 45, 40, 22 and a half, and then whatever the fifth year option is. And that takes into account all the dead money that you would take from, this would be after moving on from Kirk after the second year. So, that's not bad. You know, that's not that bad, especially considering the fact that, you know, the salary cap just went up $30 million per team this past year. Every contract, you know, we just saw yesterday a couple, you know, record signings for Antoine Winfield and other players. You're going to keep on seeing record, you know, contracts for certain positions or whatever, because the overall, you know, the market's inflated and you know, that's a good thing for the players and the teams. It's good for everybody, that they're going to be making more money. I think a more accurate way for reporters to talk about how much money a player is making would be to make it relative to the salary cap. Like, what percentage of the salary cap is this player being, are they making? Cause that would more, clearly convey or more accurately convey how much the team is, you know, allocating towards this particular player in this particular position. But all in all, it's to say that the Falcons are not really, you know, spending a ton at the position, at least relative to some other teams.
Yeah. Agreed. And I want to say to the chat, man, Bradley, what's going on, man? Marlon, good to see you, dude. Lisa, what's going on? And one time says, shout out to Joe, the Damski New Millennium Falcons podcast. And Jack, we did, if you're still here, buddy, we did talk, or I boosted out the Rise Up tour, and I will do it again later in the show as well. All right. So, and yeah, it does. I mean, I didn't want to bang on Arthur. I'm not banging on Arthur, but it seems like the, like Adam said, like the press, the it seems like a different atmosphere, like a lighter. It's not just appear that way from watching.
I'm glad you brought it back. Cause I did want to talk about that too. Address that. What Damski said, which is you're totally right. The perception that you have is like, yeah, when Raheem walks into the room, people kind of, you know, naturally just start smiling and like perk up in their chair, you know, and part of that's because he's new, you know. Anytime you, I think you have a new coach, you're going to have an element of that. But obviously a part of that is Raheem's personality and just the fact that he's, you know, he's like that. He's this upbeat, energetic, smiling kind of guy. And that makes you feel good. It's just like a you know, human being thing where when you're around people who are like that, that's how you feel. And in Arthur Smith's case, when he's kind of standing up there and he's, you know, mean mugging and kind of, you know, doing his sardonic humor, you know, dry, it's just like doesn't come off as well, at least for the people who are in, a lot of the people who fill up that room, which are, you know, young reporters and stuff who, yeah, it's just different personalities. And I think that Raheem Morris fits great. Fits great with the organization, fits great with, you know, his role and what he has to do with media. And I can't wait to, you know, have a better relationship with him. It's, we're very, still very early into this thing. I think there's only been a few press conferences that we've done together. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I would also agree with, you know, the criticisms of Arthur Smith, by the way, in terms of like the way that he kind of dealt with media. I would definitely have criticisms for that. I think I see it a little bit differently because I had other interactions with him where he was definitely not in media mode. And so you just, so it helps like me understand that he's just kind of doing, he's in this mode where he's just, you know, he's trying to not give away too much information and, you know, all this stuff. And you know, I don't think it played well for him.
It appeared to me like he was the type of coach that he just wanted to coach. Like he didn't like the,
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Like he just,
all he cared about is football.
Yeah, totally.
The media part was just like something he had to do, not that he's something he wanted to do or looked forward to doing. Even though he may have had a good relationship with a lot of people, it was just kind of like that was just like, I got to do that part of it. So.
And even saying that, I would say like, you know, I think people liked kind of his stoicism in some of those press conferences when things were going well. You know, the first couple of weeks, you know, teams 2-0 in training camp, he's busting out the mustache. People were like, oh yeah, this guy's. It's like you just bring
or the about. Beers. Remember, was that last year? He was drinking the beers.
Cracked over the beers after the game with the boys. I mean, like definitely. But then you know when the results don't go your way, and I think that there was some. I don't want like not turmoil with the players, but I do think that it was, you know, when you're not having success, I think players naturally just start to question things. Are you putting us in the best position to succeed? Did you make the right decisions coming into this year to give us the right position, put us in the right position to succeed? I think that, you know, clearly I think players felt like they kind of had gotten screwed by the decision that the team made to go with Ritter because it became so clear early on in the season, frankly, that he was just not going to be the guy going forward and that they were just trying to persevere through this year. And I think that all kind of piled up on Ritter's shoulders as well. And you really saw kind of collapse there towards the end, which was, it was hard to watch as someone who, you know, again, you deal with this person, you know, on a human level every week. And you just hate to see anybody struggle like that. And it's still tough for me, honestly, to like see the jokes made about him and that, but also you understand it just kind of comes with the business, comes with the territory. And Arthur, this is the thing I love that Arthur Smith would say, was that like, we're not victims here. Like we get paid great. We are lucky to do this stuff for a living. And, you know, he busts out the Latin quote amor fati, which means like love of one's fate, which is like, you know, so you just like, whatever happens to me in this business is going to happen. You just got to try to enjoy it the best you can. And the realities of the situation is that your job is very public and people have a right. Like that's the whole reason that you exist, is almost for people to like have the right to criticize you or praise you based on the way that you perform. So it's just the nature of the business, and it's tough that it went that way for them that year. But you know, something that even, I think it was Darnell Mooney who was speaking today, and he mentioned that he kind of mentioned offhand just very quickly when he was responding to a question that like Drake and maybe Kyle, but definitely Drake, like had issues with like some of the things that the scheme stuff that was happening last year. And again, I think with the quarterback that they were dealing with, it's kind of hard to like define what the actual root of that, you know, displeasure was, but thought that was a little bit interesting.
Agreed. Yeah. And I mean, I think the last time, I don't know if we had you on before or after, but I started doing like a rudimentary, like film, basically review from like the Minnesota game on, you know, and it wasn't like super in depth, like QB school or anything like that. It was just basically, my point was just like, okay, here's, you know, here's what I'm seeing kind of on a, just a everyday Joe's level, you know, like I wasn't trying to, you know, and I wasn't like, I needed Damski on there to help me with some of that stuff. But it was, but dude, it was,
You're pretty good. Don't you're doing pretty good.
But it was week after week that you would see open looks all the time that were not getting hit or not or just missed or not even getting seen. And it wasn't, you know, Arthur would get killed for the play call in that game. And it's like, and I would say it every week on the show, like, guys, like this is really more on the QB. Like there don't get me wrong, there were some questionable plays throughout the game. Every game there's always a handful of plays, but for the most part, literally for the like for the most part, it was on whichever QB, Taylor included, was he was terrible, as he was equally bad. Like it was just bad QB play. And it was, I mean, they were, because there were plays to be had every game that would have changed the trajectory of those games, you know. And we're not even having this conversation right now had that just been a average quarterback making those plays, you know. And I'm not even a diss on Ritter or Taylor. That was just kind of the reality of it. But because I wanted to see it for myself, because after that so long, I'm like, man, is it really, like, is he really calling like this? Because I mean, I would get irritated with a few plays, but you know, the TV copy, unless you're at the game, you can't see everything going downfield, you know? So it's like, let me check it out, you know? And I saw it and I was like, okay, well, this is definitely not what I expected to see, you know, but now I understand. So yeah, makes total sense.
And I think that that's why he, like, you know, you got midway through the year and he starts, you know, he pulls him in that Tennessee game and then Heinicke gets some starts. And I think that, you know, what Arthur was battling was like, I have to give my team, I owe it to the players to give them the quarterback that gives them the best chance to win. And I think that that's the thing that he really wrestled with. And I, at the time, actually thought it was that he should not have pulled him yet at that point, that it's just kind of one of those things that you have to battle through with a quarterback like Ritter and where he was at the time. But I also understand where, you know, Arthur and why he went the way that he did. But I think that ultimately killed, you know, Ritter's confidence. And
sure,
he was ever the same guy after that.
No, agreed. And Lisa said, I feel like Jesse Bates expressed that sentiment recently. I think Arthur Smith was heavy in the locker room, well-intentioned, but it probably threw the players off. That's probably pretty accurate.
And it's not just Arthur. I think that it's like, this is what happens with every coach pretty much that ends up getting fired, is like, you don't get the results and, you know, it's never like a personal, it's very rarely like a personal thing with players and the coach and disharmony that happens in the club. It's just, you just lose confidence. You lose faith in, you know, leadership essentially. And this happens all the time, whether it's in football or any other industries. Like when you lose confidence in leadership, then you have to replace that leadership. And then usually, like is happening now, there's a lot of energy behind the new regime and you hope that it can kind of catch, you know, like it catches and it takes, like the gears kind of catch and it takes off and things go smoothly, which it just never seemed to happen. It's a tough situation that Arthur was in, where you're trying to do this tear down and rebuild. And it's just so hard for all of that to go exactly how you want it to.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, off of Arthur and on to these two guys, and I want both of you guys' opinion on this. Expectations for Troy Andersen and Richie Grant this year. Whoever wants to start.
I've been talking for a while. Damski can go first.
Okay.
Good.
That's so funny. I posted that picture the other day of Troy. I think it's Troy. No, Troy Nate and JD Bertrand, and it got some traction. And then like I didn't even say anything. I just put smiley faces because they look like. You know what I mean? I'm one of those football people. I'm like, I just like dudes like enjoying football. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's a good picture. Like Zach Harrison's in there. Just, you know, just vibes, just good vibes. And people are like, oh, why is Troy in there? He's terrible. I had some guy tell me today, oh, he's awful. Like, he's such a bust. I'm like, I don't like being that guy that's like,
well, if you watch the film, you know, you'll see this. And like, but like, honestly, Troy Andersen was playing very good football, his best football of his career prior to his injury last year. And that's what made me so frustrated, because I really felt like had he gone the 17 games, I really feel like we'd be like, hey, man, if Troy takes another step on the step that he just took, he's going to be a top five linebacker. And I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm not even saying that just because like, if people knew my assessment of him early on, I didn't really like him. I'm not a fan of drafting just raw athletes. Like, that's why I think I don't agree with the Rucaroro pick, because he's such a raw athlete, but he's an explosive athlete, so I get it. So I didn't like Troy Andersen early on, and I thought, like, oh, he's playing QB running back. So, like, linebacker is a very feel-out position. You've got to be able to feel out gaps, fit your run keys. I struggled with his physicality a bit in the run game. He's not a guy that I love. So it's not like something I was like, oh man, he's the best. He's this. So this is something like you see gradual development over time. And that, like, I knew it was a long game with Troy. So the first year game passed, second year, he did okay. This is his third year this year, or is it his fourth?
That's right.
Third year.
Third year. So second year, first year, he started a lot of games because Mikel Walker and I think somebody else was awful. So he came in. And then second year, development again, like, that's what you want. First year, you see what you got. Okay, second year, what did you do off your first year? Okay, it looks good now. And then I was like, oh man, playing good. Okay, well, now injury. So, and I think the biggest thing with Troy too, like, because of his injury, I'm wondering if he's gonna struggle with the physicality, and because a pec injury is hard, because anything you're pressing on, like, right, you know, Mike, but or John, like, anything you try to press up on against, you're going to kind of feel like, if you're already hesitant going into that when you're 100%, doing that with a pec injury is probably going to scare you a little bit. So you get a better feel for how that works, right? So I think the first couple of games, there was a lot like Taquan Graham last year. Like, he was awful, like, when he first came back from the Achilles. But the last four or five games, he really started to be able to take on double teams. He got two starts, I think, at the end of the year when Grady and Andromada and Kavius Street was out. And he started to look himself, right? So it's just one of those things, like, I don't know if the fan base is going to give Troy time, but I'm hoping that the coaching staff does, because I really feel like he's just on the cusp of, like, just breaking through and being a good player. He played will linebacker last year. I'm hoping he kind of sticks in that same spot. In the Fangio defense, they actually call it Jack, not Will. Will's kind of – he's a pass rusher. He's not an off-ball linebacker. Basically, Caden Ellis will be the Mike, I'm assuming, and then Troy will be the Jack, which is a Will in traditional defenses. So I think, like, he's still going to have that freedom to roam around, make plays. He's very much a see ball, get ball linebacker. Like, the second he sees it out, like, it's gone, it's done. He'll kill it right away. And then his leverage on coverages was improving too. So I just hope he gains that confidence. And like I said, I hope the coaching staff does well with him. And I hope they give him the chance to just keep playing. But I know, like, they drafted their guy, JD Bertrand. And I was telling Joe the other day, JD Bertrand's already seeking out coverage stuff. He was working with Oliver Davis, who works on with all of our DBs, basically DeMarco Helms, AJ Terrell, Jeff Okuda was going there last year, D. Alford. So he's going to, like, he's trying to develop into a full-time, like, a do-everything linebacker. So I mean, Troy's going to have JT coming at his throat. And then Nate Lehman, I think, is going to be the backup mic to Caden. So I think Troy's going to have a good year if he can stay healthy. But if he goes down, you know, it's going to be the Caden and Nate Lehman show. I'm excited for that. But I want to see Troy. I want to see another full – if we get 17 games of Troy, I'm pretty sure our tune from now to then will be very, very different. Richie Grant, I kind of fell off of the bandwagon. I didn't really look into, like, why he was benched later on in the season. I'm pretty sure it was because of open field tackles he was missing a lot of, and that's just obviously, if you're safe, that's a big no-no. You can't miss open field tackles. But if you look at it, like, he's very much a zone safety. And if you just look at the uptick of, like, what Raheem's probably going to run if you go with the trends that he did in Los Angeles, you would think that he's a better fit. for what they're going to try to do. But you can only say these excuses so many times for Richie, right? A lot of the times, like sometimes, a lot of the times it's like, well, you know, he's man coverage and then he loses. Well, like if he just like 4 years now, if it's just the same trend, then obviously he's just not a good man coverage player, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious to see if he even wins the job over DeMarco. From what it looks like they're not bringing in safety help. They're looking at corner help. So it's really going to be up to Richie and DeMarco Helms to really see what's up there. The expectations for Richie this year, just be average, man. If you're average and Jesse Bates is like as good or as great as he was, like you'll be okay, man. Don't blow tackles, don't blow coverages, and make some. Like my rationalization is, dude, they got so many damn DB coaches in there, like good DB coaches. That's like our coverages should be really good. So for Richie, it's just like, just get 1% better every day, a little Dan Quinn quote for
there you go.
Yeah.
DeMarco's been starting, which I think is interesting. He's basically been, looks like to me, like he's running as the starter right now when the first team defense is in there. Again, it's May, so it's very early. That could definitely
even in
change.
Nickel?
In nickel. It's typically Mike Hughes as the boundary corner and then Alford in the nickel and then Helms at safety with Bates. Yeah.
That's interesting.
But I did see him rotate in for some first team reps today too. So, I think that they're definitely kind of in a battle, essentially, you know, classic training camp battle that will happen, this summer. So that will be interesting. And I don't really have that much more to say about Richie. I hope he can. I do wonder if maybe he has to embrace more of a role like the team had for Isaiah Oliver in 2022, where he like came back and he was kind of this. He was in this nickel and he was playing a lot closer, more interior and closer to the line of scrimmage. And it does seem like maybe that could be a fit that Richie Grant has. That's not a type of player that you draft with a second round pick, but you know, that's what he probably is for this team, at least at this point. So that is what it is. I think that for Troy Anderson, the potential is a lot greater there. And it's so like people call a bust because they didn't see him play last year because he was out injured. And it's like, okay, well, not a lot you can really do about that. And I do definitely agree with you, Damski, about his like deficiencies. Very clear about like the physicality. He's just not a run stuffer. Like that's not, and that's not, I think, what they need him to do or, you know, expect him to do on a regular basis. He has to cover, right? What they really like about Troy Anderson is that he allows them to do different things to figure out the back end coverage. Because when you have a player with his type of athleticism, you can just change things and make things much more unpredictable for quarterbacks based on the way that you can use a player like Troy in coverage. And so that's what they really like about him. I totally agree with you that I thought that it was pretty eye-opening those first couple games that he had last year before he got hurt. I thought he looked a lot better because I did think that he got lost a little bit in coverage that first year. He was just kind of a little bit reactive instead of kind of being proactive and just a step behind. And it's a shame because he has that he's got the athleticism, but he was just kind of a step behind. I thought that he was much more kind of on top of things early in last year before he got hurt. So that was unfortunate. I will say to me, and I don't know, sometimes it just happens with me when I haven't seen a player for a long time and then you see him again, but like, he looks physically bigger to me. Like his legs look bigger.
I thought that too.
Yeah.
Just looking at photos, his back looks a lot bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. He looks like he's put on a lot of good weight. So that's something to be hopeful about.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're talking about, if he still has that speed running it, any bigger you're going to get with the same speed, that's always a good thing. So,
And one other thing that people might not know is that he actually lives with Nate Lammon during the season. So like all last year, even though Troy was hurt, he was at home and they were breaking down tape. They were kind of like doing everything together. And, Nate talked about, they kind of like worked together to kind of get him ready to play on Sundays. And so, it's good to have that kind of camaraderie too. It's funny just how that's worked out with the linebacking core, not so much with JD, but like with the other three, they're all kind of like from that Mountain West area and just kind of have that kind of common bond with all of them being from like the Utah, Montana area. So, it's a good group.
I'll add too to the Troy Anderson thing. Like if they're doing the same thing from the Rams stuff, like they run like a 5-man pressure package and they run like a dime package where a safety comes down, there's a dime linebacker there. Like that's like Troy Anderson's like, if you're trying to peg him into a defense, like a dime linebacker is exactly where you want to put him. So if that's like, if Joe was saying, hey, that's what they like to do with him, I could imagine we're going to still see the 5-0 looks. And then you're going to have Troy Anderson have a really good defense. But then you're looking at a guy like Richie, how they factor in. Richie would probably be a good spot for that 50 front where he comes into the box and is covering little intermediate stuff instead of deep stuff, right?
Yeah.
So like there's avenues for Troy to look very, very good this year. I just hope that he's healthy, and I like our linebacker core. I know there's a lot of projection with like Troy Anderson and like what he can be, but if he just continues what he was doing last year, I mean, I really feel like they're going to get him in the right spot. Honestly, a really underrated move this year, two of them was Ike Hilliard as receivers coach. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great – not a lot of people – we're probably the ones that understand how good he was back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a very good player.
And
then Barrett Rood was a great linebacker back in the day too. He was just always injured, but he was like one of the more instinctual players from – I remember – when I first started playing like high school football, he was in the league and he was doing well, and he was a guy that I like studied that I liked. And those I think are two very underrated coaching hires. Like I'm really excited to see those guys and what they can do with their rooms. I like our linebacker room, and I'm curious to see how it shakes out. And like I said, JT Bertrand can be that guy, but I think Troy's gonna have a really good year and finally kind of put some things to rest there in Twitterverse.
And what Troy lacks in physicality, I think it really helps that they kind of had this discovery in Nate Landman last year that they can, you know, that you've got this kind of sledgehammer type of linebacker that you can bring in when you need. So it gives them a lot of versatility in terms of the personnel packages that they can put together with what linebackers are on the field to best suit what the team needs in that moment. And like even today I saw, you know, Troy not like lined up on the edge, but almost like kind of like creeping up on a blitz and then, you know, coming off the edge with D'Angelo Malone on the other side. I know that that's something that they like that he brings, is just, you know, with his pure speed and athleticism and ability to just, you know, not be an edge. Cause I know a lot of people have talked about, would you just like change his position? That's not going to happen, but no doubt they're going to use him as a blitzer just because they know he can be so disruptive by getting into the backfield so quickly and just disrupting things like that. So and
yeah,
he had a nice pass breakup today too. A nice, real clean one against like a Tyler Algier wheel route. Troy did.
Did he? Just covering a wheel.
Just shadowing Algier on the wheel route, and then as soon as the hands went up, just stuck the hand out. So it was a no look, but clean hand to it. Yeah, got a lot of loud cheers from the coaching staff and the players.
I'll say to you about Landon, man. I was just looking through like old threads that I did, like. Dude is just so angry when he does football. Dude, like
I was watching a thread
against the Packers when he was playing the Packers. I think that might have been his first start. And there was a guard puller, and he hit the guard so hard that it hit the running back and they both fell down. I'm like, dude, that dude's got a different kind of strength. Like,
yeah.
I'm excited. I like watching him play football, man. Like he's an old school, like, I remember Al Wilson back in the day with the Broncos. He used to blow shit up. Like, he's the same throwback kind of player. But they were saying they think the days of the 220-pound linebacker are done because box counts these days. But the 240, 245, 250 linebackers are going to have to come back in the game.
I'm all for it. That was the best times, man. You just had these big freak.
I'll send you the clip after, John. You're gonna be like, "Yo, that's
not." Oh yeah, definitely. Hell yeah, definitely. I miss those guys. We were talking about that not long ago about how the linebacker positions changed so much over the last 20 years, 25 years, where they weren't asked to do things like this. Now you basically have to be an amazing athlete that can not only cover but fit the run, you know, and get out on receivers, get out on tight end. Like, you got to do everything as a linebacker now. So it's changed a lot since, you know, early when we were watching. But you know, and I can't say much more than what y'all already said with Troy. And I totally agree. And with the amount of, I mean, you know, Raheem definitely ran a lot of simulated pressures in Los Angeles. You would think that would probably continue here. And the more athletic guys you have, or it makes the offense sit there and go like, damn, we don't know who's coming. you know, because they're all capable of doing it, but we don't know, you know, like that's great. Cause you're going to put them in a bad spot. Richie, I mean, I was like with Adam, I was defending Richie, like me and Adam were like out front with like swords. And like, there's like, we were the Game of Thrones.
Just me and
like,
John. Come
back. That was it. That was it. We were Jon Snow. Like, we were like, no, it's y'all. It's not it. And then I think it was the Bucks game when Kate Otten and Megan just looked stupid at the end there. Like, you know, and I was just like, okay, I can't do it anymore. Like, I have to physically stop at this point because I just took it out of me. But, and then, you know, and as weirdly enough, you know, folks were wanting DeMarco like all season. And like, you think I would, because I'm an Alabama fan. And I was happy we drafted him. But like, I was trying to tell folks, like, he wasn't great in coverage at Alabama. Like, that was definitely his Achilles heel. And that's why he went so late in the draft. Like, he was a liability in coverage. Preseason games, he looked a lot better in coverage, obviously against, you know, vanilla offenses, vanilla looks and everything like that. But still, you could see there's an improvement. And then during the season, you could see an improvement. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe, you know, with Jerry Gray and these guys, like he's getting better, you know. You can't just be faster. Like, you can't just all of a sudden wake up one day and be faster. But like, you know, you can be smarter. You can study better. You can all that, you know, do all that things as a safety. I think both those guys definitely work better up in the box than they do obviously covering a deep third of anything. And I think you're right, Adam. I think, like, you know, you don't want Richie covering a deep part of the field at all. Like, that's where he struggled a lot last year. And, you know, I don't know. Like, that's one of the questions I was going to ask you, Joe. And now you already kind of answered it. Was, do you think DeMarco could push him for the starting job? But I guess if he's already seeing some reps, then that might be the case then. Yeah,
that Cardinals tight end got Richie too. I forget.
Sure did. And he talked about it after the game too.
Yeah. That was a bad one. That was a bad look.
Rookie tight end, right? Yeah. Rookie tight end. He's
rookie or second year or something like that. Yeah, like, but he had his career high game against them.
Yeah, I think in the press conference after the game, he was like, he kept seeing him on me. I was like, hey, just keep throwing it to me, man. I'm like, damn, really? Like, that hurts, man. That hurts. But all right, well, last question, and we'll get out of here. We're up at about an hour and 20 minutes. CB2 has obviously been a conversation for a while now. And we kind of thought that, you know, Akella Witherspoon was one option before, you know, that played with Raheem, possibly would come over. You know, I know we got homeboy from the Cardinals, Antonio. But like, Do y'all see? I know we just hosted Jerry Jacobs, right? Or he's visiting, or is visiting soon. So, you know, you're talking about like Mike Hughes out there, Clark Phillips out there, and listening to what Raheem said, he loves Clark. You know, they like Clark a lot. They asked Raheem about, you know, does he prefer a tall corner, or is he okay with a shorter corner? And he said, well, hey, you know, I had the pleasure of coaching Rondae Barber at 5'9" and I coached, you know, Aqib Talib at 6'1". And he's like, Rondae could play ball. You know, and if he was here, I would take him today. You know, so it's like, I'm not, you know, we've seen Clark, at least in college, cover bigger guy. He shut down, but he handled Drake pretty damn well when he played him in college. So like, and we know what kind of grit the guy has, but how do you see CB2 shaking out, Joe?
So my prediction, Mike Hughes is kind of the guy, seems to be the guy right now. To your point, Raheem has said that they love Clark's movements. Again, he always says this word movement.
Elite.
I actually like, elite. You know, I think he's literally like looking at the way you kind of like your gait, your like the way, just the way that you cut. I think that he is actually kind of like looking at these things. But So, you know, Mike Hughes is it now. I think Clark is going to win this job because I think that he's going to have a really good training camp. Like, because he's the kind of player who can make a lot of plays. You know, he's a playmaker, and he might get beat sometimes too. He certainly will with his size profile. It's just going to happen. But I really think that he's going to make enough plays throughout training camp that he's going to convince these coaches that he's their best option. So that would be my prediction of the way this goes. As for D. Alford, I think that his playing time is basically locked in. Like, he's almost more of a starter than any of the guys who are competing for the CB2 job, because they're going to be in nickel, you know, 70% of the time, if not more. So he's going to definitely be playing a lot for this team. It comes down to Mike Hughes and Clark Phillips for me. And I think that Clark is going to, I think he's going to see it himself starting week one. That'd be my prediction.
How you feel about that, Adam?
Mike Hughes is interesting to me. I know Raheem said it before, like, young guys are going to play. And I think those specifically were, like, talking about DeMarco Helms, Clark, and D'Alford, right? So I don't know. But, something in me is saying, like, I don't know if they're, like, I don't know if they're pushing to, like, win this year. Because I feel like if they were, like, the easiest question would be to have paid Bud Dupree. Like, he got barely anything from the Chargers. And then bring in a guy like Akilah Witherspoon that has familiarity with your defense and who plays average football, right? Who would, in my opinion, be an upgrade to what Mike Hughes was. But I just don't know how much they're going to push for it. I would personally, if this is how the roster is, Jerry Jacobs comes and goes and we don't sign him, I would prefer to see Clark start there. And I think in a fair one versus one camp battle, I think Clark would beat Mike Hughes out. I just think Mike is he's been way too inconsistent his whole career. But Mike's a valuable player because he can play multiple spot plus special teams. So, like, when people were trying to cut him, I'm like, it doesn't make sense because he can play inside, outside, and he plays most special teams. So he's a valuable player for, and he's making, like, $2.5 million. So, and we know AJ Terrell typically misses a game or two every year, just the physicality that he plays with. So it's good insurance for him. And same with the Hamilton cat that we signed from the Cardinals. He might be insurance for AJ Terrell as well. That being said, I would prefer that they brought in a guy like Jerry Jacobs, just somebody who's got, like, quality starts under his belt. Like, Mike Hughes had quality starts way long ago, but we haven't seen it. And even when he came in, when D. Alford randomly got benched for no reason, because D. Alford was playing good last year, it wasn't like Hughes was giving you good quality starts then. Like, he was missing tackles, his coverage wasn't great. It just didn't make sense to me. Now that we're using him as a boundary corner, I get it because he's got length. And if you're playing, like, typically I've seen the coverage charts, if you're playing like cover three and quarters coverage, or kind of you're just playing like a quarter of the field, the length helps, but if you're constantly getting burnt and stuff, like, it just doesn't make sense. But I'm gonna stick to my guns and say that'll end up being a bet come training time. Maybe it's Jerry Jacobs, maybe it's Kilo, maybe it's,
yeah, I should have added that if they do sign someone, I think that player will be the starter.
There'd be a reason for signing.
That would be the only reason they would do it. They see him as being their starter.
Yeah, I mean, they did make a few later additions last year. I mean, when they, you know, into the summer that they ended up playing, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, some good minutes. So, yeah, that makes sense to me. Berto, what's going on, buddy? Good to see you, man. Chris, what's going on, man? Sorry, I neglected the chat there for a second. I had the full screen, so I couldn't see what was going on. But, yeah, man. So, here we go. Chris saying, yes, smoking Joe. Yeah,
that's nice, right, man. Nice.
Liam, what's going on, dude? I guess he got back from his run. So checking to see if anybody had any questions in the chat, then we can move on. Carrie said, not a big Mike Hughes fan, respectfully. There was a whole lot of Mike Hughes fans last year, to be honest. Because most times that he was in, something bad was happening.
Poor. I mean, I thought he was pretty poor last year.
I did too. Yeah.
Later in the season, I thought you could see why they liked him for the run support. He was a nickel. He was kind of more stout. But I don't know if that's a reason why. Agreed. You know, those guys are out there to cover.
Right. Yeah, we'll definitely be, Lisa. We'll be at training camp at least one day. I'm sure Joe obviously going to be there. Yeah, but we'll be there. We made it one day last year. We're going to try to make it once or two. I'm sure it's going to be insane this year though, with the additions and everything. I'm sure it's going to be even. It was a great atmosphere last year.
Insane. And I feel like, yeah, last year was crazy. There was one day there was a freaking line, like,
yeah,
just crazy up the street. I don't know how long those people must have been waiting in line to get in. I imagine this year it's going to be even crazier. They got a quarterback actually now.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's like, I mean, to y'all's point earlier, when you talk about like when Arthur had the mustache and everything going on, it had that photo of him smiling with that mustache, and we posted it, and my dumb ass tweeted out, was like, man, we were kicking some ass this year. Yeah. And then I've got like 400 people coming after me after the season, like, what happened? I'm like, yeah, I got nothing for you. Like, I was, you know, you're gonna win love and lose someone. I definitely lost that one. One time, so I have sport esports in 3 hours, nothing to do anymore. Hey, man, that's what we're doing. We're just talking Falcons. That's all we're doing. Then Jackson Country and I are planning something cool for fans coming to camp this year. Awesome, man. Keep us posted for sure, dude. And Berta said, barring a shocking trade, CP3 is CB2. Yeah, I would think so as well, man. That's what we're all kind of seeming like that's going to be the case, man. But anyway, Adam, you got any last questions for Joe before we get out of here?
No, I mean, just keep asking the good questions because they're all I got in there. No, just no.
We don't need any tampering questions. We got enough of those that Kirk's not going to answer. So we don't need to like ask him more. Like, that killed me. I'm like, how many times? Like, really? He's not going to say like, yeah, it's probably going good. You know, like, I mean, come on, dude. Like, that's, you're not going to say anything. Anyway, sorry.
I don't know much. Well, what I'll ask this, Joe, because this one caught me by fucking surprise today. Sorry for my language. What's going on with Bijan? Did he tweak it at OTAs or what?
With who?
Bijan.
I think they said it was an ankle injury. I didn't know about it until today.
Been to OTA? Oh,
okay. Yeah, he was there. Yeah, he was there. He was like kind of hanging out with the running backs wherever they went today. So he was out on the field, just in some street, like in athletic gear.
Yeah, Raheem snuck that one in there today. Okay.
kind of made me laugh. He had like Bijan had like his like track pants on and like a t-shirt, and then he had like the track top that was like draped around his shoulders and like tied in front. Like,
I love that guy, man.
Jace was out too, right? From rookie minicamp, he wasn't there.
He's
recovering from a pre-draft injury, right?
Note today was that, speaking of Bijan, when I noticed him, was when actually Kirk went over. They had, you know, run some plays, and then Kirk went over to where the running backs were standing and was like definitely like demonstrating some ways that I'm going to hand the ball off and kind of where I need you. And he was talking to him about like, you know, you'd see him like talking about like turning your shoulders a certain way when I do this. So it was like, it was cool to see him working with those guys again, just to kind of like refine these little things. And you could like kind of see from a distance them all being like, oh yeah, I get what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So again, it's just kind of that leadership where it's like, no way that something like that was going to happen with, you know, Desmond Ridder. No offense to him. It's just like what happened.
No, 12 years in the league, 13 years in the league. And to be the type of guy he is, no doubt about it, man. And like, and one last thing too, I heard Darnell Mooney's talking about their trip to John Gruden's place.
How'd this not
in Tampa?
Yeah.
I know, right. And to basically, I mean, watch Rouse concept. I mean, it's him and Kyle Pitts and I think Drake London, right?
Yeah.
And with Kirk, you know, because Kirk was the one who took him down there, you know, and just watching a bunch of film, you know, and breaking it down. And it's hilarious because I think Darnell said they talked about things that they don't like or things that drive them crazy or that they hate. Yeah. And Darnell said he told Kirk that he hates it when they check down on 7-on-7. So don't do any check downs on 7-on-7.
It's like, we're doing 7-on-7. What's the point of checking it down?
Exactly.
It's like, let's actually, let's try.
And they said, and they said, Kirk said that he hated when receivers celebrated when they made a catch. You know, and I was like, dude, I'm sorry. If we make a hell of a catch, we're going to celebrate.
You're going to have to not like it here for a second.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll ask this, too, because this is just something I've been noticing. But do you think we'll see a lot of Ray Ray McCloud? And, two, just to ask another question, and I'm good. Kyle Pitts, like, is that neat? Like, is he planting better this year noticeably?
He definitely looks more comfortable for sure. I would say for sure he looks like, and honestly, it even comes through in just like the way that he talked to media, where it's just like he seems just happier on the field, you know, just like enjoying himself more. And that's just because I'm sure he was like playing through some like pain maybe not pain, but like just like discomfort, you know, when he's out there and just it frustrates you. You're not able to kind of be as happy on the field as you want. So I definitely got the sense that he is definitely feeling better. And then what was the other one?
I was just saying, like, we're seeing a lot of Ray-Ray McCloud.
Oh, yeah, Ray-Ray. Yeah. I haven't seen him taking many offensive reps, honestly. But I think he's basically like a core special teamer. I think he's going to be like their kick. Okay. He's like their kick returner, basically.
And then Rondell Moore's look good, yeah.
You know what? I haven't really noticed much of him. It's still so early. And I would caution that, like, they're not in pads, and also, like, you know, what we're watching, we're field level, and you're kind of like looking through a wall of people who are standing in the way. So you're not like always getting the best look. So I'll hold out on that. I honestly didn't even notice him. I noticed that he's still wearing number nine on their rug. They have two number nines with Penix and Rondale Moore. So I think he must be holding out for like somebody to get cut or some number to change that he can.
Somebody said he switched to 14. I thought I read.
Oh, did they? Oh, well, maybe that's why I missed him, because he was number nine on the roster that they gave us. And gotcha. I just didn't recall seeing that. So that'd be funny if that's the case.
Yeah, he's an exciting player. I'm curious to see like those two roles.
I remember watching him when, you know, as an Ohio State fan, watching him at Purdue. He was like, wow, with his athleticism, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that there's definitely room there for them to get something out of him.
Well, my last question, Joe, outside of the rookies that we drafted, anybody stand out from the guys we brought in, or anybody like kind of just catch your eye that, you know, could be a surprise add or anything like that?
I think I mentioned it earlier on the show, but like Casey Washington had a really nice diving catch by the sidelines. That was probably like the standout play that I saw today from like one of these types of guys. And so I think that there's, again, he's just kind of like a no like name ID to him. There's like no expectations. I think that he's going to be anything more than a special teamer. And I think that he could be. So I think that there's potentially something there. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. And yeah, it was funny about the whole like John Gruden trip. I can totally see John Gruden like sitting down with Kyle Pitts and be like, Kyle Pitts, you know, like, and just like trying to like motivate him, you know, do all the John Gruden thing. But and you know, they all said, they were like, you know, Darnell Mooney's like, he's a special person, John Gruden. You know, I think they all just like had a huge appreciation and sitting down with him. And he told Kyle Pitts, the grandfather of the choice route was Art Monk. He's always like giving them, like, you know.
And Kyle said, it made me feel old as shit. He was like, man, I didn't know they had film back then. I'm like, you shitting me, dude? Like, come on, man. Like, I didn't need that reminder.
But again, to bring it back to Kirk, you know, it's something where it's like right when he signed, like this was like something that I guess he wanted to do. So he was like, all right, guys, like, you know, we'll be in town for these dates. You know, these are our opportunities. Let's figure it out a time where we can all get down there. And so then they planned it out that far early. And then obviously the trip happened last week. So just cool to see Kirk kind of initiating a lot of that stuff. Coach Kirk, as Jesse Bates called him.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, Kirk had a really good thing to say about Jesse too. I'm sure y'all saw that. He ate with them in the lunchroom and said, you know, like if this is the leader of our defense, then we're in really good hands, because he's the guy, you know? So that's overall, guys, I mean, I think our quarterback room is going to be fine. I think I think Penix and Kirk's going to get along just fine. They know their roles. They know what they're there for. They're all pulling in the same direction. I think anything else outside of that is just going to be made up stuff that they're trying to, you know, the media, not you, Joe, like I said, but other people trying to, you know, just kind of make a story out of something that's not really there. You know, it's not like you have Kirk's history is not something that you can just look at and be like, oh yeah, he's going to really just be a dick to this guy, and he's not going to, you know, like, come on, like, that's not going to be Kirk. He's going to be professional and be, you know, what we saw on the quarterback show on Netflix. I mean, for sure. So, one last question then for both of you guys, because schedule releases tomorrow. Is Pittsburgh the game you're most looking forward to, or is there a game that we know who we're playing, or is there a team other than Pittsburgh you're most looking forward to playing?
I mean, I'm not looking forward to a particular game so much as I'm just looking forward to seeing if they're going to get like a Sunday or Monday night game, you know, because it's like, you could say primetime game, but really the primetime games are like Sunday and Monday night, especially the Sunday night. I think that's like the premium game to have now. And that's the one I want. That's the one I want for this Falcons organization. You know, that's what they want too. They want to show off the stadium that they've had for a long time. They just have not really been able to showcase like they've wanted to. So that's what I'll be looking out for more than any particular matchup. I'll definitely be circling the Steelers one for sure.
Oh yeah. What about you, Dansky? Can you hear me? Did your headphones die?
We lose them.
Hello? I can sort of hear you. There we go. Can you hear me? But anyway, hang on. That's fine. If he comes back, can you hear me, Damski? I think his mic is dying. But
can you hear me?
There we go.
Now we got you.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No.
I really wanted to answer this one too.
Good.
I'm coming back to Atlanta in December again. And remember last year, they were away the Sunday that I was there.
Yep.
So that's the only game I care about. I'm hoping that they're there this year when I'm there, just so I can book it and go to that one and cross that off my list. I've seen them in Detroit, Buffalo, and I've seen them when they came to Toronto for the Toronto series with Buffalo. I drove past the Mercedes-Benz, so like I want to actually go in. I just didn't have time. That weekend, as you know, John, I was completely slammed. National championships is actually a crazy thing. I didn't realize it was that crazy. So,
especially in Georgia, dude.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was a crazy experience. I'd never seen so many NFL players and their kids in one spot, but it was nuts. I'm hoping that's the only game I care for. That's really it, honestly.
I love it, man. Well, we'll like I said, guys, we'll try to be back on Thursday night. Just talking about schedule release and what we're looking forward to and anything new that pops up between now and then. But Joe, man, thanks so much, dude, for coming by again. Sorry, like I said, Mike couldn't be here, but I appreciate you coming by and talking rookies and everything Falcons, man. And
it's a good time. It was fun.
Yeah, dude, we'll definitely do it again, probably before the season starts. And anything you want to plug up for the radio station or anything
you
want to
know? You can follow me on Twitter at jpatrick200. Listen to 929 The Game if you're in the Atlanta area. How about that? And if you guys do, or if you're going to training camp or whatever, hit me up. Let me know. I'd love to,
definitely.
Take your hand, meet you guys in person. And Damski, coming down to Atlanta for a game, definitely let me know.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, once we can figure out the day, we'll definitely, my kid's going to for sure make me go at least one day. He racked up last year. Mike had him CP signed everything for him, signed his jersey. And then he had so many signatures on his hat. So yeah, we're definitely doing that again.
Nice.
Adam, buddy, anything you want to plug, man?
Just the new Millennium Falcon. I actually think I'm doing a podcast with them. I'm finally got time to get on with them and, exercise some demons because those guys get on me, but scheduling, you know how scheduling is, so
yeah, man.
It is what it is, but yeah, follow them, and then I'm just on Twitter making Joe mad with my Desmond Ritter jokes at Damski 32.
Did you see Trey's joke the other day about his number?
Yes, I did.
Trayshawn, he said, man, this man really picked the number of turnovers he had last year for his number. I was like,
Trey's a
social name,
and I love that guy.
Oh, I love him. So funny, man. But anyway, man, thank you all so much for coming by tonight in the chat, hanging out with us, son. We had right now we're right around 400 people between YouTube and Twitter, so we appreciate y'all dude. Yeah, Twitter. I had no idea we were that big on Twitter until they started actually showing the numbers in StreamYard. It dwarfs YouTube, which is cool, but so if y'all are on Twitter, feel free to come over and subscribe to the channel. It just helps us out a little bit. So it's on this, you can still watch us on Twitter, just subscribe anyway. We appreciate y'all, man. And if you're listening to us, like I said, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, drop us a 5-star review. We much appreciate that. And like I said, hopefully Mike and I'll be back. We haven't done a show together in like a month, so we'll be back on Thursday night together. And he's hopefully in one piece after moving furniture all evening tonight. We'll hope to see that. But guys, again, appreciate y'all, and we will see y'all on Thursday. Much love.